Welcome to Now. I'm David Berg.
And I'm Lin Yang.
Today, we'll introduce you to some innovators who are making artificial reality more human.
Now, after the development of robotics, we can provide children with some more suitable learning tools.
Then we'll see how high-tech and agriculture are working together.
Scientists have discovered some new planets that could be as old as the universe itself.
And the one that goes around the star every 48 days, this is at the right distance from the star to allow liquid water on its surface. So this is why we say this is potentially habitable.
We'll hear about the new movie, Drones.
And we'll meet a musician who regained his ability to play thanks to some advanced technology.
That's all coming up on this edition of Now.
In the comic The Jetsons, George and Jane have a housekeeper that's a robot.
Well, Rosie the Robot is a cartoon character. Artificial intelligence is becoming more a part of modern life.
VOA's George Pootich tells us that engineers are bringing robots closer and closer to real interaction with humans.
In 2000, Japanese engineers stunned the world with their humanoid robot Asimo, which could walk, run, and grasp both hard and soft objects. 14 years later, robots are still not ready to help out in our homes, but many mechanical and electrical solutions first applied in those experimental platforms are now being used in industry and medicine. Different mechanical arms and hands are being designed for jobs that require not only greater strength and precision than human hands, but are also safe to operate around people. Barrett Technologies' robotic arm mimics any move done by a human-operated arm, down to the strength of the grip.
You can control the forces on a person. You can control the forces that are being applied by a person. So it's great for rehabilitation, for physical therapy, for surgery, that type of thing.
A robot called Baxter is very good at learning even complicated operations with no need for special software. General manager at Shanghai Gaitech Scientific Instruments, Jensen Chang, says robots like these will increasingly replace humans at menial jobs.
At the same time, you can train.
At the same time, you can train the people to do something advanced. This is the so-called development for society.
This little robot can locate and kick a soccer ball. While it cannot do much more, research engineer Jason Jin says it can surely get elementary school students interested in robotics.
Robotics is an integrated kind of subject, including electronics, mechanics, and computer science, etc. So it has great educational use. Now, after the development of robotics, we can provide children with some more suitable learning tools.
By the time these kids become robotic engineers, they may be improving robots that are then at work in our homes. George Pootich, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, Japanese engineers have developed a robot called Pepper that responds to human emotions.
Pepper was developed by the Japanese mobile company SoftBank in partnership with Aldebaran Robotics of France and the Chinese company Foxconn.
The 120-centimeter-tall, 28-kilogram robot has two arms and, of course, a head, and he rolls around on a wheeled base.
In the middle of Pepper's chest is a touchscreen that can be used to communicate, along with its gestures and its voice.
According to SoftBank, Pepper's main function is to interact with people.
Pepper can tell how a human is feeling based on their voice tone and facial expressions.
He also uses voice recognition technology and algorithms to analyze people's speech patterns to figure out their emotions.
Pepper also uses cloud-based artificial intelligence to learn how to respond to people.
The robot is scheduled to go on sale in February for about $2,000.
But there is more likely going to be additional costs for cloud-based interactivity and artificial intelligence update.
Now, Lin, I want you to know, I saw the video of this thing, and he's kind of cute, you know. He's
I'm very little, intrigued. How tall is this?
You know, about, well, on me, he would be about waist high.
Okay.
I couldn't understand anything he was saying, though, because he was speaking Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently Pepper will speak in, like, Spanish, French, English,
and... Yeah, I bet programming languages in are not going to be that difficult.
But yeah.
What is Pepper going to do? He's just going to interact with you,
I guess,
without doing any housework?
Well, he can't really pick up anything because while he has fully functional hands, he's not really strong enough to take out the garbage or something, you know.
Okay. But, I mean, if for $2,000 I can buy something to help me do housework,
yeah,
I would consider buying Pepper.
See, now, you're being more practical. This is an emotional interface.
I am. What about you? Would you buy Pepper? What do you think of a robot that can read your feelings?
Let us know your thoughts, humans only, please, by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can email us by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
While robots are still being developed to interact with humans, some farmers are using high-tech tools to provide food.
Along with high-tech machinery, farmers are trying out agribusiness services that promise to turn data about their farms into higher return.
Reporter Veronique LaCapra looked into one particular service that's trying to predict the weather and aims to help farmers adapt to climate change.
The Finfrocks farm about 3,200 hectares of corn and soybeans in central Illinois. It's a family operation. The couple run it with just their son and one employee. To farm all that land with just four people, the Finfrocks use some pretty high-tech equipment. That tractor is attached to a planter that can seed 48 rows at a time. That's a 24-meter swath on one pass through the field. And on the straightaways, the tractor can steer itself. But Shelley Finfrock says there's one thing no amount of technology can control.
Weather's probably the most important thing and the most uncontrollable thing.
Finfrock says weather affects every aspect of a farmer's operation, from soil fertility to pests and weeds to yields and profits. The soil crunching under our feet in the field behind the Finfrock's house looks and sounds dry. But below the surface, it has just enough moisture to get corn seeds to sprout. The problem is, rainfall varies a lot, even from field to field. And because the Finfrock's farms are spread out across five counties, they can waste a lot of time driving out to a field, only to find out when they get there it's not fit to plant. So for the past year, Finfrock has been beta testing an online service called Climate Basic. Every morning at about 4:15, it sends her a text listing her family's farms and how much rain each one got in the past 24 hours, down to hundredths of a centimeter.
We have a farm from where we're sitting right now, just a mile south, and it'll say it was dry, and you got a good half-inch rain, and you go down there, and it's dry. So it was a pretty good tool to use.
But giving farmers that kind of precise weather information takes lots of data.
We are dealing every day with more than 10 million points for precipitation, updated on an hourly basis.
Tristan Dolgeval is with Climate Corporation, which developed Climate Basic. He says the company uses data from the U.S. National Weather Service and other sources, some public, some private.
Including radar, rain gauges, and satellite to have the best picture of the rainfall on a field-per-field basis.
Climate Corporation has set itself a lofty goal: to help, quote, all the world's people and businesses manage and adapt to climate change. The paid pro version of its software just launched this year. It aims to give farmers advice about all aspects of their operations: what to plant, when to apply fertilizers and pesticides, and even how much money they can expect to make off their crop. Agricultural advising isn't new. People like Eric Gordon have been doing it for a long time.
I'm on the phone with several of my farmers two and three times a day during planting season. It's a people business.
Gordon says some of his older colleagues worry that technology may make human crop advisors obsolete, but Gordon doesn't think so.
I don't see it as a replacement. I see it as a tool to make us better, more efficient.
Climate Corporation's Tristan Dolgeval agrees. He says the computer models are only as good as the data that people put into them. That means the company needs detailed information about each farm, things only the farmer would know.
That's why I think it's very important for us to have very clear guidelines and principles with what we do with the farmers' data.
Dolgeval says Climate Corporation keeps that information confidential. But Shelley Finfrock is still wary of how much data she should really share.
Because of competition and because of having Big Brother watching, I don't know how else to put it.
In this case, Big Brother is Monsanto. The agricultural biotech seed giant acquired Climate Corporation last fall for close to $1 billion. As apprehensive as farmers may be about their data being misused, an increasing number seem willing to take the risk. According to Monsanto, they're already using ClimatePro on more than 400,000 hectares. And the company plans to keep expanding, from corn to soybeans, then to other crops, here in the U.S. and internationally. For VOA News, I'm Veronique LaCapra in St. Louis.
So what do you think? Let us know your comments by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is at Now VOA Show.
Tomorrow way too far away. We can't get back yesterday. But we young right now. We got right now. So get up right now. Cause all we got is right now.
An international team of scientists said they have discovered two new planets orbiting a star nearly as old as the universe.
As VOA's Roseanne Skirbel tells us, one of those planets could have conditions that could support life.
Astronomers focused on Captain's star. It's the second fastest moving star in the sky and among the brightest and closest, just 13 light years away. That makes it an ideal candidate for study, says team leader Gilliam Anglada with Queen Mary University of London's School of Physics and Astronomy.
We can get higher precision on the measurements, and also because it's low-mass star, we can detect smaller planets and lower-mass planets.
The astronomers recorded periodic changes in the motion of the star using spectrometers to calculate shifts in the star's light.
And this tells us that there's a planet around them.
Writing in the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, Anglada describes two new planets. One circles Captain's star in 48 days, the other in 120.
And the one that goes around the star every 48 days, this is at the right distance from the star to allow liquid water on its surface. So this is why we say this is potentially habitable.
The planet, dubbed Captain B, is about five times the size of Earth. The second planet, Captain C, is a more massive super-Earth that astronomers think is too cold to support liquid water. While the findings confirm the growing evidence that planets surround every star, Anglada says what sets Captain's star apart is its age.
It formed only 1 billion years after the universe was born. The universe has 13 billion years around that. This means that the elements to form planets that could support liquid water were present very, very early in the story of the universe.
Anglada says life would have had a very long time to evolve, making Captain B the oldest potentially habitable planet discovered to date. The next step, he says, is to probe its atmosphere to find out whether it has water. Scientists are developing instruments to do that. While we're waiting for answers, you can see Captain's star in the sky over the southern hemisphere with a pair of binoculars. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
That would be great. So we can go live there.
What, you want to colonize a planet that's God knows how many light years away?
Not colonize, but what if we can find another habitat, you know?
Why?
What if Earth become too crowded?
Well,
we're producing new lives all the time. I don't know.
Well, I don't know about that either. But by the time the people, these things are so far away, by the time the people would get there, they'd be dead.
Wait,
you'd have to be born in order to get there. You know, it'd be like your grandchildren would get there. You'd never see the thing. You'd die in space.
But we can learn about it.
Well, no, I'm paying for this trip. I want to actually put foot down on terra firma.
That's all about NASA. And then if you would like to see video animations of these new planets, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And you can post your comments or ask questions at our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Follow us there at Now VOA Show.
A new film, Drones, from filmmaker Rick Rosenthal, poses some complex defense, ethical, and political questions about drone attacks in the ongoing war against global terrorism.
The film explores what happens when one young drone pilot questions the ethics of her mission.
Rosenthal told VOA's Penelope Pulu that although his movie is a fictionalized account of drone combat, it is based on research and interviews he conducted with the soldiers who wage remote control warfare.
Major, you gotta help us. He's a mile away. Maybe we can take him out now and no civilians die. We wait 2 minutes and we take out his whole family. Over.
Code weapon.
Weapon coded?
Weapon status.
Weapon armed.
In Drones, filmmaker Rick Rosenthal builds a tense character drama inside a windowless control room at a Nevada airbase where the two pilots have a close-up look at the innocent people they will have to kill in order to eliminate the terrorist amongst them. This is the first day on the job for drone pilot Sue Lawson. She will be court-martialed for refusing to obey her orders. Her father, an Air Force general, makes a last attempt to convince her to complete the mission.
If we'd had drones back then, I wouldn't have had to drop bombs on God knows how many thousands of non-combatants.
Dang.
We are protecting people the whole world over.
Rosenthal says his film does not take sides regarding drone technology.
It might be anti-war in the way that Paths of Glory was anti-war, but I don't think it's a film that takes a side as to are drones good or are drones bad.
But it does, he says, question absolute authority.
Is it more patriotic to question when you feel something is being done wrong? And that's a complex issue as well.
There's several unidentified terrorist suspects.
Copy that. Nice work, guys.
Several unidentified terrorist suspects? Jesus, Jack, they're civilians, they're kids.
The film raises the question, is it possible to wage an objectively defensive and ethically acceptable remote-controlled war?
Where you stand depends on where you sit. So if you're in the Middle East and your family has been attacked by drones, you're going to have a very strong attitude about the efficacy of drones. And if you are somebody whose family has been wounded or killed by a terrorist attack, you're also going to have a very strong feeling about the use of drones.
To kill because this technology is going to win us the war. Now, this is going to be the toughest thing you ever do. But you can do it, and you will do it.
Rosenthal says although his film is fiction, the story is based on real drone pilot accounts and intelligence on this new type of warfare. And while piloting a drone may feel like playing a video game, the targets are for real. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
So what do you think? This young woman has an ethical crisis about firing at civilians.
I mean, I will. If I know by killing those terrorists means I have to kill civilians and children, I will feel really bad. I don't know. I don't think I can pull the trigger.
I don't know. I would have an ethical qualm about it, too.
Even it does, the impact would be too huge, I would assume.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot of... I don't know. You have to distance yourself from the situation.
I guess.
It's like some of the doctor was saying, if you are too close with the patient, you could not do an operation on them because you just cannot see the big picture.
Yeah, that's why they don't let doctors operate on their own families.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you plan to see drones?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can email us. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. Jason Barnes has been playing music his entire life.
But as Jason told the Reuters news agency, a work accident 2 years ago cost him his arm and almost cost him his musical future.
I was at work and I don't really remember anything, but apparently some electricity arced off some power lines onto like a pole I was holding. I woke up in the hospital and I was just like cooked, and I didn't really know what happened. Everybody was like, yeah, you got electrocuted.
Despite his disability, Jason refused to give up on his musical passion. That's where Gil Weinberg of Georgia Tech comes in.
Weinberg has been building musical robots his entire life, and he thought he could help Jason out.
he developed a machine that is part prosthetic and part robot, making Jason Bars a cyborg drummer.
So the first stick is just about that. It's about taking signals from his muscle with EMG and allow him to control the grip of the drumstick to create the kind of sounds that he wants.
The second stick is powered by algorithms that help it to translate music into real-time improvisational rhythm.
Jason said that getting used to the new device and the ways to make music with it took some adjustment.
It has a lot of potential, you know, to create all kinds of things that people have never heard before, you know, because there's certain things that it can do that's not humanly possible, you know what I mean?
Gil Weinberg says that the cybernetic implant could help develop new genres of music.
With cyborgs, we're actually trying not only to imitate humans' behavior, but to extend it and expand it and see what else can be done. And of course, this is a little scary. If you see a lot of Schwarzenegger movies, cyborgs can be dangerous. But I focus on music and how dangerous it can be. The music will suck.
Weinberg says he has plans to fine-tune the prosthetic, but for now, Jason Barnes is just enjoying the ability to make music again.
This guy, you know, he apparently got electrocuted and he lost his right hand,
mm-hmm.
like just below the elbow. They had to amputate his arm.
Okay.
And this little contraption that he wears to drum, it looks kind of like something out of an Erector set, but it's got these two drumsticks.
Okay.
And one of them goes really fast, and the other one kind of keeps a solid beat.
Okay. And he can control the speed.
He can control it with the way he flexes the muscles in his arms. That's how it works. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the left arm is normal. He's just hitting it with the stick in his hand. But the other one, the right hand, is kind of doing this. And I'm like, well, no, yeah, that's cool. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then you could hear him drumming and you'd go, wow, that guy's fast. It's like, no.
No, it's the machine.
The right hand is the machine. See?
Mm. Maybe it takes him to a different level, like a whole new level.
It does.
It
allows
him.
Because
with human hand, it's hard to do it that fast, I guess.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that they said in the report about this is that they haven't developed this technology quite as extensively as they want to because they want it to be able to hook into a neural interface. In other words, all he has to do is think about moving the drumstick rather than actually moving his muscles.
Whoa.
Yeah, they haven't developed it quite that far yet, but that's where they want it to go.
But I feel like, see, I played a piano since I was very little.
Yes.
And after you play for some time, it's not about your brain. Your fingers have memories, too.
Right, you have muscle memory.
Sometimes I don't have to think anything, and I can play.
Well, that's what you're supposed to get to as a musician. It's called muscle memory.
Yeah, and
that way you can be more creative.
If you take that out from the musician, I think that's a big part. It's a loss.
Yeah,
they have to have that.
Well, okay. I'd like to have it for the guitar because then I could shred. Not that I want to lose my left hand, but you know, if you could have some kind of the Matrix, you know, you could just hook up and be suddenly your Carlos Santana.
Something. But this thing can help him
make music,
pursue his dream.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really good thing.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to learn more about Jason Barnes's cyborg drumming, you can log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And if you want to comment or ask a question, log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can email us your comments by addressing them to voaasia@voanews.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
If you want to hear our program again, you can log on to our website, www.voanews.com/now.
And you can also find us on iTunes.
If you want to comment on our show or have any questions, you can visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Don't forget, if you want to email us, our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until tomorrow, I'm David Bird.
And I'm Lin Yang.
Join us again for another edition of Now.